Hi, everybody. Welcome back to our podcast that is for and about recruiters. So full disclosure, you guys know that a lot of times when we do this, most of the time, it's a guest who I have never met and have an email relationship with, and I meet them the same day you meet them. But that's not the case today. We have Gail Otterbert, who is the owner and president of Gail Otterbert & Associates. I've known her forever. She is a Pinnacle member. She's the vice president of technology for Pinnacle, has been a member since 2015. So obviously one of the top producers in the country, but she's also been a friend of mine since forever ago, because we both started in the business around the same time, sometime back in the Pleistocene epoch, it feels like. Gail, how are you?
I'm doing great. Now I feel much more my age, though.
Yeah, uh-huh. I wasn't letting you get away with that. I wanted to talk to you about two specific things today, so I appreciate your time. But I thought it was funny yesterday when you said, what are we talking about? And I said, don't worry about it. You can handle it. You were like, as long as it's not current events, which I would have no interest in talking about. But it did make me wonder what you currently are watching or streaming. Are you one of these people that's on Netflix, Amazon Prime most nights, or are you not that person?
I watch 1 hour of TV a night. Yeah. And right now it is, what's the name of it? That's my age. The Gilded Age.
Oh,
And the Valhalla.
Ah, okay.
See, I watch Gilded Age after my husband falls asleep, because it's a little too girly for him. But if there's like weaponry and someone's going to get decapitated, my husband loves the show. So.
And he's all in, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you learn a lot about someone based on what they're streaming. Like I'm like obsessed with these scammer shows now, like Tinder Swindler and The Dropout and Inventing Anna. And I'm like, why do I like these shows? And I think it just makes me feel like I'm a better human than these awful, evil, monstrous people. But I don't know what it says about me that I have to find these like totally evil people in order to feel better about myself. But yeah, my thing right now is scammers on Netflix for sure. Okay, so let's get into this. So I want to talk about two things that you did kind of later in your career that I get asked about all the time. One of them we'll get into, which is how you make the transition from contingency fees most of your career to then saying, okay, I'm going to do something where I get monies, and you do a very specific version of retained work called RPOs, which I get asked about all the time. And people have mightily struggled to convert when they're well-known in a space like you are. Gail's been an insurance expert for many, many years. Most people say, I keep trying to make the transition. I can't do it. I know you have, so I want to get into that. But the other thing you did kind of late in your career, I also get asked about. I get people who are 10, 20, 30 years in their career who say, maybe I should get in the Pinnacle Society. And they ask me about how does it work and how do I get in? And so I know a lot of people listening to this are in that position. Like, do I belong in the Pinnacle Society? Do I want to get involved? What would I get out of it? And at this point, some of them right around the same period of time in the business that you and I are, is there value at that point? I'm just curious, first of all, the mindset. What made you decide in 2015, by that time you're 30 years in the business, what made you decide at that point in your life, maybe I want to get around these top producers and get in the Pinnacle Society? What was that all about?
Well, prior to that, right, I had a team, a large team. And, you know, after my third or fourth recession, I decided that, you know, didn't really work for me as much. I wanted to, you know, really get back into the recruiting piece, which I really liked. And I was always very good at, but I needed someone to talk to. And at that time, as you know, the Connecticut Association was dying. I had no peers to reach out to. And, you know, I knew about the Pinnacle Society primarily from you. And I thought that would really, you know, be, you know, an honor to get in, but, you know, you become like the people you surround yourself with. Yeah. So I just wanted to stretch higher. And it's really kind of interesting. The first meeting I went to, which, you know, you're the pledge who's trying to get in, Jordan Rayboy had something called the Summit Club. And it was a voluntary thing where you had to, you know, tell everybody what you made every month. And, you know, when you're on your own or you're with friends, people can lie or kid themselves. But when it was almost like going to Weight Watchers. It's an accountability group where every month you have to say, yeah, this is what I did. Well, you know, as an individual producer with a couple of people, you know, researchers that support me, you know, I could skip a month or two of production, right? And kind of take it easy after you've had a spurt. But once I, you know, joined the Summit Club and then I ran it for a couple of years, you know, the last thing you wanted to do was have a blank month. Yeah. So, you know, I found that, you know, it kind of kept me consistent. It kept me honest. It was accountable. But you surround yourself with people who are all reaching for the next level. They may not all be like you, but so many good ideas and so driven that I found that it really, instead of me thinking, oh, I'm going to retire when I'm 58, you know, I'm mm-hmm. like, no, I want to work another 7 years because yeah. I'm having fun.
So a lot of people say to me, let's say they're in insurance. I don't want to go into the Pinnacle Society where I can see there's, you know, three or four insurance recruiters. What if we have the same clients? Am I going to give away trade secrets? Are they going to steal from me? I never had that concern because I knew there were tons of people in software sales and yet, you know, Beth Schneider, Jeff Furnick, Larry Botell all got in and we ended up splitting with people. But did you have some of that fear? And what was it like once you got to know the other people that do what you do?
Well, I had none of that fear because I had also been on the board and was the president of the National Insurance Recruiting Association. And that's 80 recruiting firms that specialize just in insurance. And we work together all the time. We do splits together, but we also hold each other's hands, right? When someone's having trouble with a client, they're having trouble with negotiation. When I first joined them, I thought we'd be competitive. You know, those are my go-to people in the insurance industry, right. You know, to, you know, because, you know, when we're all on the same side, recruiters, right? Our competition really is talent acquisition. You know, it's not the hiring managers, it's talent acquisition. So we share all sorts of thoughts and ideas, cover for each other, share contracts. So worrying about three or four in the Pinnacle Society, you know, that never even crossed my mind. And many of them are also in the National Insurance Recruiting Association. So you know, I never had that thought.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I reassure everybody by just saying, God, it's a big world out there. Don't worry about it. And I've never heard anybody quit the Pinnacle Society or complain about it once they get in. They all end up just ending up splitting with each other and commiserating, which is the real value of it, you know, to begin with. So the other thing I get asked by people who've had the kind of tenure you had when you got into Pinnacle is, how much of it is you get in and you get these aha moments where you go, oh my God, I had no idea this is how people are currently doing the business. I have to change my best practices or buy this technology. And how much of it is just, I don't know, reassurance that you really are doing the right thing because these other people are, or even how much of it is, holy cow, I'm smarter than most of these people. What was I so freaked out about? Like, how did it compare?
Well, it depends who I'm sitting next to that day, right? I walk away from every conference, and again, I go to multiple and multiple associations. I never walk away from a conference without a good idea. And sometimes I get some inspiration because I'm like, I'm not so bad, you know, and then there's others where I sit next to, I'm like, I really got to pick it up. But there's always someone who picks up on a concept or a technology that I never thought of. And at the most recent conference at Pinnacle, two of our members talked about something called Hintro. And to say that, you know, I was intimidated to do it and get on video and send videos out, I was not comfortable. I tried it, you know, I didn't like myself on video. And then I bit the bullet and did it. And the results have been remarkable. So, and it would have been something I never would have done. And that, you know, I give that 100% credit to those people who at Pinnacle who shared their ideas with others, right? They could have kept that little secret to themselves, but they didn't, you know, they did it. And then I called them and I said, should I do it? I'm really uncomfortable. I sent them the video and they're like, Gail, go for it. Just don't watch the video and send it out. it was wonderful.
Expand on that for the audience who doesn't know what you're talking about. You're sending videos to clients, to candidates?
You could do it to either. Right now I'm sending it to candidates, but Hintro is, you know, you do a video clip of about a minute and you send it out to your candidate in an email or if it's a first connection on LinkedIn and said, hey, my name's Gail Ottaber. I saw your profile on LinkedIn. I have this position. You tell them maybe three bullets of what the job is about. I'd love to talk to you about it. Give me a call. Yep. And there's analytics that come along with that. So you can see, you get emailed immediately when they open it, when they watch it, when they finish it. But the thing that's really interesting, Danny, is, you know, when you send out, you know, emails, LinkedIn messages, text messages, it's like junk mail, right? When you get it out of your mailbox, you just throw it out before you even open up the envelope. And we're sending out so many messages and aren't getting responded to and trying to call people. And I'm a cold caller from 38 years. You know, I'm really competing with all the auto warranty companies, right? People aren't picking up their phone for fear it's that kind of call. So you need every trick in the book to get through to people. Well, sending the videos out is so novel, right? That people are getting it and they're going, who's this? And they play it. So it's, I think the view rate is, I don't know, it's like a third or a fourth of people that are looking at it or receiving it or actually watching it. And if you can get them to just hear you, you might get them on a good day. If they're not paying attention to your messaging at all or your phone calls, you can't reach them. For me right now, it's all about candidates, right? The unemployment rate in insurance is less than 0%. So, you know, trying to attract their attention is pivotal, but also being able to tell my clients I'm sending out videos because I, you know, I go for the exclusive each and every time. You know, if I'm doing that and someone else isn't, you know, that's a key factor, whether they're going to give me a job or someone else.
Yeah. Well, I give you credit because I know people in Pinnacle who heard that session and got the emails from the people you're talking about. And some of them work for me, by the way. And I've said to people over and over, it's like, according to Danny, we have 1700 pages of documents, prose. We have a registry where you can look up scripts. And then we have the video center. And it is remarkable. Like about 5 years ago, people just said, yeah, I'm just going to watch the 3 minute, 4 minute, 8 minute videos, depending on the training track. It's how people get their news, you know, and yet recruiters are resistant. And first they were resistant to leave the phone. And then they said, okay, I'll leave the phone, but I'm just going to send emails. And they resist the video. And when you say 25% or a third, it doesn't matter which one of those it is, because the reality is the response rate from email is less than 2%. So right. Do the math, my God. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of it is just, it's a new thing. So fear of change. And then unfortunately, there's a lot of people who are afraid of being on video and feeling like they're going to be judged physically. You know, I get that, but get over it because it's about the messaging. They don't care.
Yeah. And, you know, I would go to the gym in the morning, go walk on a trail and come to work. Now I have to like shower, do my hair and wear makeup. Like that is huge on a regular basis. I look much better to the people in my office. But, you know, that was one of those things where, you know, comfort zone. And when you join an association like Pinnacle, right, it pulls you out of your comfort zone. It makes you look at different things, right? Look at different avenues. Maybe video isn't for everybody, but there's always a concept that's being introduced that you can go, maybe I should try that one. And the people around you encouraging you to try it. Like, that's the interesting thing. But I have to say, when I first started, you know, I was like most people, you're totally intimidated, right? Like, these are the best people in the country. Like, should I be a part of it? Are they going to like me? Who's going to sit and eat lunch with me? I mean, I was afraid of all of that. And then you forget, like, they're just people who work real hard. And or smarter. I mean, not necessarily more hours, right? Just smarter. So.
Well, yeah, but a lot of them are people that just work really hard. I have had people in my office who are Pinnacle members come back from the meeting, and I pay for the meeting. So I'm like, okay, what did you get out of it? If it's a meeting that I didn't attend, and I want like data, like show me what we're going to do different on your desk tomorrow. And a lot of them will say, you know, this meeting, there wasn't anything that was different. It's just that the people who build the most are working much harder than I am.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, even that is valuable. You know, right. Even that is valuable, because when you work on your own with some support people like you do, who do you compare yourself to? Who calls you on it? You know, it's not like when I was working for John Hobson or you were working for Dave Kincaid, where you had both the owner breathing down your neck, but also you had the people on your team that you wanted to be better than. And it was pretty obvious. If you make 100 calls, you tend to do better than the guy that makes 40. Now it's harder to tell, but at the end of the day, like here in our office, the $2 million plus people all the time, Larry and Jeff, you know, Larry doesn't go to bed after he watches his Netflix. He then hits LinkedIn, and he can't go to bed until he finds candidates that he can present the next day. So, you know, we're making ridiculous money. Isn't that worth extra effort? And sometimes you get that out of Pinnacle, just like, man, these people are committed. Holy cow. I've been dogging it. That's valuable too.
Yeah. A day never goes by when I send out, you know, I make a placement and I still go, I can't believe they're paying me this much for this. Like it's, you know, 38 years later, I still pinch myself and go, God, somebody's going to find out that it's just me and they shouldn't be saying Texas large, but
See, that's why I like these scammer shows, because I feel like I'm not as much of a scammer now.
Right.
Okay. So let's get into the other issue that, again, you did later than most people that I have tons of people ask me about every week on Ask Danny, which is, okay, I get that money up front is better than contingent money in this market where these companies need people. This is the time for me to try to get retainer money. But how do I go to somebody who I've been, whatever, charging 20% for 10 years and I found them 30 people? How do I say, well, now you have to pay me more money when they're so used to it? I can't afford to lose these clients. I assume at some point you decided to jump off and do this. Talk to me about that process. How did it happen? When did it happen?
Well, it probably is going to sound a little bit different than how you laid that up, because what happened was, you know, it was back around 2000-ish, and we were beginning to see some changes I don't know how many recessions I went through, but we were starting to sense some changes. And I had a team of 14 people at the time. And I'm like, I need cash. So when you're up in the middle of the night and you're thinking, how am I going to make payroll? Because I'm feeling like things are lacking here. I remembered a conversation I had earlier that day with one of my clients who were saying that they needed to fill 30 positions throughout the country. Now, this was like pre-internet days, right? You know, we were just starting, you know, to use some technology. So, you know, I called them the next day, came up with this idea, and I said, you know, I think I have a way where we can fill all your positions. You know, you pay us, you know, I put it down on paper, you know, pay us X amount of dollars a month. And then for every placement, you'll give us a reduced amount of this amount, but we'll fill all the positions in, you know, 2 or 3 months, and you could pay us out over the course of a year. So it'll level out, you know, your burn rate in terms of cash that's coming out. We'll fill everything and we'll go one by one. When they come into the state, we'll pick them up at the airport. So as I was putting it together, I was sharing it with another recruiter friend of mine at another company. And he said, Gail, that's an RPO.
Right.
And I'm like, what's an RPO? And he said, you know, recruitment process outsourcing. And I think at the time ADP was doing something like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I put a talking points together, and basically it didn't have anything to do with my needs. I mean, it did. I wanted cash. But I was really addressing the needs of my client. They'd never heard of it before. And I was saying, this is what it's going to do for you. It's going to slow out the payment over time. I'm going to do all the work together. The pricing came slightly less than my full fee, but not really, you know, you know, just a hair less. But it also wrapped all those jobs into me. So if they, you know, the person came in through an advertisement or a referral of someone else, they got pulled into that process. So I never worked on a position and didn't fill it. It was guaranteed I was going to fill each one. So it was a point in time. It worked, and they renewed the RPO three times after that because they were still in growth mode. We went from filling underwriters to loss control reps to claims, and then it ended. But the reason why it worked is because they didn't have talent acquisition at that time. They didn't have a recruiter relegated to this growth. And, you know, I've continually, you know, offered RPOs to clients, and we had one, you know, every year or every other year since then. But it always was in response to the need of the client, not the need of me having money, needing money every month. So it was a mutual, it was mutually beneficial. And it's worked out, you know, tremendously well. So, you know, we, you know, have continued to do it. But I have to say, would I take an RPO right now? Probably not. I wouldn't.
Now, why do you say that?
Because the unemployment rate is so low, and it's so hard to get the candidates that, you know, when I was getting those RPOs, I was trying to lock down those jobs, right? I wanted those jobs so no other recruiters could work on it. And I knew that I could fill it because there was at least, you know, 5 to 7% unemployment rate. You can get a flood of candidates and get them filled quickly. Whereas now, that isn't the case for me, right? There's a lot of work to find a job, and some of them are unfillable, and I can get so many positions at once. So the RPO is less attractive because, right, you're really, you know, relegating your individual attention to them. You're really spending 80% of your day on just that one contract, and you have to fill those positions come hell or high water. So at the moment, you know, I want all exclusive contingency because I can work on multiple positions at once and MPC candidates. So I have the opportunity to fill more positions at a higher fee. Gotcha. So, you know, I'm not, you know, at this stage in the game as interested in getting that monthly payment, but I also learned over the years, you know, when I had to take that original RPO, it's because I had a lot of people on my firm and we lived more on a 3-month basis, you know, that rolling, our expenses are such. So whereas now, I always keep a year's worth of revenue in our coffers, right? We no longer need a, credit line, but I've always saved that up, you know, for the good and bad times. That's the experience, right? Of working a long time. I don't know if that's overexposure, but, you know, it's just the way I work. So I don't have to take any jobs I don't want to work on. I can walk away from things. I never want to feel obligated to anybody. So that's how I've structured things so that I can keep myself, you know, honest.
Well, and obviously the smaller the firm, the more nimble you can be. But I think it's a great message for people to hear because people I find, and I found this in Pinnacle, people are like black and white, like somebody who says to me, I want to go retainer. And then, you know, they hire me to teach them retainer. And then they go all in. And I don't know why people can't say, as you did, RPO makes perfect sense for this particular time in this particular market, but you don't necessarily have to say, okay, I'm changing my website. I no longer take this business. You know, we're a large enough firm so that there are people, Larry's done a couple of RPOs, and there's other people who wouldn't want to touch it here, not because they're afraid of asking for monies, but because, as you say, they were like, that's just too big a commitment. There's too many other jobs. And it's funny how people will say to me, this is such a high demand market for candidates. This is when I can demand monies up front. True, but as you just said, it's also when it's high demand is when you might not need monies up front. And you might make more money by being the bachelor. But so devil's advocate, some people are going to listen to this and go, Okay, but when you go back to exclusive contingency, one of the benefits of an RPO, when a company transfers all or part of its recruiting function to an external provider like you, then they tend to say, yes, we agree that you're guaranteed to fill all these jobs. So if we get a resume from social media or an internal contact or talent act, it's got to go to Gail, and she takes them through their process, and they feel like they have continuity of process and they can work with one vendor who's going to control all this. And obviously there's a cost reduction, and you've done a much better job than some people who give away the store, by the way, and they're taking 25% to a half of their fee. And I'm like, okay, that doesn't work for me. That loses its value. But when you go back to contingency exclusive, are you able to retain those benefits of anybody you guys get internally has to go through me? Because we have found anyways that with the advent of Talent Act and social media, companies are less and less inclined to say, well, we'll send you all the people that come through our personal network, because they see that as a real potential free option. Like, you don't get my networking people, and I'm paying Talent Act their money, so why can't they work on it as well? So do you retain those benefits when you're contingent exclusive?
The issue is, and I found right now, I've done these for, 22 years.
Yeah.
When there's talent acquisition, in my experience, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. I'm getting brought in. I've worked on a lot of companies that are starting up, or they're going through a large expansion, or they've decided that they used to do something through an outsource and they want to bring it in-house. So they have to fill up a department. Like, there's special circumstances where this makes sense for them. Remember, yeah, it's always about the client, not about you. Mm-hmm. So if it's like temporarily going to ease a pain, and their CFO is going to say, this is a good idea, right? It's the CFO, then you don't have to worry about what anyone else thinks, right? That's when it's going to work. You're going to make their life easier. On several of our POs, we did all the offer letters. We did everything from soup to nuts. But there's a time where they no longer need you, and you have to be the one that figures that out before they do.
Yes. Yeah.
And walk away from it and say, okay, we're going to go back to contingency now and call us with the hard ones. Because, if they feel that you're starting to suck them dry because you're getting paid for things you're not doing, it's something, the relationship has then changed, and it will damage your future working with them.
Yeah. Right.
So and it's a solution for a period of time.
Yep. Yeah. And you got to be clear right about it. You've always been this way. It's funny. I'm sure people are hearing this and going, well, she came to this wisdom after so many different iterations and so many years, but I can tell people that it's one of the things I've always found true about you right from the start, which is you're just very clear-eyed. Like, when you've a couple times said, okay, one time you had a partner and you're like, okay, I'm not gonna have a partner anymore. And one time you had 14 people and you're like, okay, that doesn't work for me. And you just like clear-eyed, pragmatically said, things are different. I will then operate differently. And so many people listening to this struggle with that. They just feel like, this is the way I was defined, so I have to hold on to that come hell or high water. And they end up suffering because of that. And you've always had this ability to go, okay, my reality has changed. I'm going to ultimately succeed. I just have to figure out how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and very often in the, you wouldn't know this if you met me initially, but very often people make their decisions with their emotions, right? 95%. Yeah. I don't.
Right.
I usually make it, based on logic. There may be tears along the way, but I'm like, yeah, this doesn't make sense anymore. One thing that I do, and this goes along with the, presentation to the clients, and this, Danny, may flip you over, but when someone gets a job offer, I always tell them, I never have sold anyone on a job. I'm like, it's none of my business whether they take that job or not. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go to work every day. They are. Like, I have to present the best offer possible to them. I have to give my clients the best offer possible, but that choice is completely their decision, and they're the ones that have to live with it every day. And if they don't feel good about it, that's okay with me. And I let them know that from the very beginning. It's none of my business. And there's a credibility factor that comes along when I don't care whether they take it or not. Cause I'm like, you don't take it, I'm going to get it for someone else. So it doesn't matter to me whether you take it or not. You make the decision based on your own barometer.
Yep.
So then they'll ask me my opinion. And the same is true when you take an RPO. If you can walk away from it, right, then they know that it doesn't matter to you. You're not forcing them into the situation. You're doing it for your client.
You know, it's funny when I'm listening to you speak and I'm remembering this was just before the pandemic. You know, I'm kind of obsessed, as my listeners know, with our fallout rate here, because that tells me we're doing a good job of closing deals and delivering our candidates who have some pain point that our client can solve. But it's always been around 4%. So the way I keep it there is every year I'll call the people who fell out, who accepted a job and then didn't show or ghosted us or, you know, sent that email 11 o'clock on Sunday night saying, sorry, but I'm not going to be there tomorrow, and devastates the recruiter. I've called all those candidates, and there's a lot of different reasons why obviously they all make these individual decisions, but the common denominator among the really tough ones, the ones that frustrated my recruiters, where I would say to the candidate, okay, I get that you made this decision, but why did you go dark on us? Why wouldn't you call Beth? Why wouldn't you call Jeff? Why wouldn't you tell him? And almost every single instant they would say to me, you know, I just could tell that she really needed this deal and that it would really upset her. And I know it was weak of me, but I just ducked it.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that is weak of the candidate, but it's also weak on our part, because they should never have a fear of giving us bad news. Because as you say, and I was saying this right from the start when I started in this business, I would get candidates and I'd say, you know, I don't from a business point of view care what you do, because I'm sending five people in, one of them's going to want the job. And if it's not you, it'll be one of the others. So I hope you get the job if you want it. If you don't want it, I don't care. It doesn't make any difference to me from a clinical business point of view. Do you understand that? I always got people to say that, because then they never felt that they had to lie to me or duck me or worry about, you know, I gave them the impression that I really had to have this deal because I can't make my mortgage payment, which I've actually heard on some calls. So that, you know, that instinct on your part has served you well. Like you said, they see you as a credible source who knows what you're doing, but you're not so emotionally tied to the result that you're going to jack them up or lie to them or exaggerate the offer. That's huge.
And you mentioned, you know, yesterday, or you mentioned yesterday to me that we were going to talk about RPOs, right? Yeah. My first thought of it. And I've gotten an email from, you know, Glocal RPO out of Texas, you know, an email to me seeing if I needed their RPO help, right? Like whether they needed me to hire people for them or something like that. And, you know, I thought about it and I'm like, I've never approached an RPO with someone who didn't already work with me, know me, trust my experience and background, and knew that I was better than anyone else to fill their positions. And now people are trying to get into the RPO business because of the concept itself. But it's the individual who's running it. Your credibility as a recruiter, your belief in your ability to fill anything they throw at you, right? You know, and your ability to emote that to both your client and the candidates, that's what's going to land you that RPO. It's not just the concept or the contract. You know, you have to be able to do it or believe in yourself to be able to fill any position that they give you, because you have this experience and knowledge and training and process and back room or support to be able to do it.
Yeah.
So it's not the RPO itself. It's you as the individual. You have to realize that you're better than anyone, you know, to fill those positions, and you have to know the industry and they have to respect you.
Right. And, you know, I don't think it should take everybody as long as it's taken you and I to get to this point. But you also have to say, yeah, okay, they're not buying in. I'm not going to work on this. Bye. I'll go get something else.
Yep.
And one of the big problems I see with most recruiters that I work with is it's hard for them to get there. They've been taught that there's no such thing as a bad job or a bad client. And, you know, a squirrel's got to store nuts for the winter. And Yeah. In a recession, I guess that's true, but that's not where we are. And it's not where we're going to be for a long time. So, you know, it's as much what you don't work on as it is what you work on, because you only have so much time.
Right. And listen, I'm not saying that you shouldn't, you know, based on the circumstance, you may have a great RPO contract right now in front of you that you should take advantage of, but you know, it really depends on the circumstance. Don't sell your soul and become their subcontractor, right? Like that's not what you, that's not what an RPO is, right? In my mind, you know, an RPO isn't just reducing your fee to fill a bunch of positions. It's really creating a solution where you both mutually benefit by, you know, focusing on one client. But if it's not going to be a benefit to you and them, you know, walk away.
Yep. Awesome. All right, you, I'm not going to steal too much more of your time. It's morning. That's supposed to be power hours, right? Do you still call them that after all these years?
Yeah, I'm trying not to answer my emails as I'm talking to you.
You know, I always feel this whenever I talk to you, but I'm so glad we did this, because people are going to hear you, and it just comes across. 38 years, 48 years, you're still passionate about the business and passionate about everything in life. And it's always so fun to hear. So
well, I feel lucky to have known you for this long. I knew you back when you weren't even, when you weren't even a Danny Cahill yet, but you everybody should know. I sent in my first fan letter, your first fan letter.
I still have it. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. And I'll get you back for it someday.
I
have avoided all this if it weren't for you.
We were 20, Gail, thank you so much. All right. Bye-bye.
Be well.